Today is Flag Day. June 14th marked the day in 1777 when the U.S. Congress described the national flag for the first time. The declaration read, "Resolved that the flag of the 13 United States be 13 stripes, alternate red and white, that the Union be 13 stars, white in a field of blue, representing a new constellation." Now, as we've seen over the years, and again since September 11th, Americans turn to the flag when the nation is threatened. We asked senior national correspondent Linda Wertheimer to look at how this country's feelings for the flag have evolved over time.
We fly it on our front porches and from the backs of motorcycles. We trim T-shirts with it, drape buildings with it. Rodeo riders dash across arenas carrying flags that stream over the horses' backs. Some of the biggest flags we ever see fly over car dealerships. We hand out flags by the thousands at political parades and stand millions of them beside the headstones of soldiers in our national cemeteries. We pledge allegiance to the flag, we sing about it in our national anthem, and we do both those things at solemn ceremonies and at the beginning of baseball games. Whitney Smith is the director of the Flag Research Center in Winchester, Massachusetts. He says for Americans, there is nothing that is not improved by the presence of the flag. In this country, the flag is almost a religion.
We didn't have a king. We didn't have an established church. We didn't have a landed aristocracy. We didn't have a single religion. And so the flag became, over time, a way of rallying people and embodying everything that the society stood for. To be an American is to accept the flag.
So where did that come from? There have been flags for more than 5,000 years. The emerging nation needed a flag, Smith says, for practical reasons. Ships that were not flying a recognizable flag were assumed to be pirates. Military installations flew flags to show who held them. And the rebellious nation needed a symbol to pull the new country together. The popular Betsy Ross legend notwithstanding, flag historians believe the flag with 13 stars and 13 stripes was probably designed by Francis Hopkinson, one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence from New Jersey. When the next two states came into the Union, Vermont and Kentucky, in the 1790s, two new stars and two additional stripes were added, but Congress soon decided to go back to 13 stripes and stay there, adding stars for each new state. As flag historian Whitney Smith notes,
it would have looked like mattress ticking if you had added all of those stripes. But the point of having it is first for recognition, and secondly, symbolically, to show the number of states. And this was a perfect way of saying we started with 13, and now we've grown, and to have both of those reflected, and at the same time have something which, from a distance, looks clear as to what it is and what it stands for.
It stood for rebellion, for independence, for blood shed, for a brand new country, a flag of the people, not the sovereign. But the flag was not as important after the Revolution as it is now. The next great moment for the flag was the War of 1812. British troops burned the city of Washington, the Capitol, and the White House, and their ships attacked Fort McHenry in Baltimore. The fort flew its enormous flag at the beginning of the battle, and the next morning, as Francis Scott Key famously wrote, the flag was still there. It may be the single most famous American flag still known by the name Key gave it, the Star-Spangled Banner. And it is still here at the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, where it's being preserved.
When you see the flag, you will still see holes, you will see tears.
Marilyn Zotis is the historian for the Flag Project. Standing in front of the glass-tin laboratory where the flag is spread out on a specially built table, she told us it has been cleaned, first vacuumed, then blotted.
In the case of the Star-Spangled Banner, the chief conservator chose to use dry cosmetic sponges to lift as much dirt off the flag as possible. The flag was very dirty, and they used 5,600 of these very tiny cosmetic sponges, and they are filthy.
Made of gauzy bunting, light so the wind could lift the 40-foot garrison flag, it was damaged by shrapnel in 1814. Bits were cut off as souvenirs for the defenders of the fort and others. It came to the Smithsonian in 1907, fragile, significantly shorter, missing its 15th star, but still the inspiration for our national anthem. The women who work on the flag are suspended inches over it on a cushioned platform in a climate-controlled lab with visitors watching them work.
They tell stories about the public will catch their eye and give them a thumbs up. People will put their hand over their heart. There are also occasions where military people will be here and they will salute the women. They are awed by its size. They are awed by its condition. They connect with it in a way that is beyond words.
As much as we treasure it, the emotional connection to the flag we feel today did not begin with the Star-Spangled Banner. That flag was a symbol of a great victory. The change came with another war, the Civil War, and flag historians mark the start of it precisely at the fall of Fort Sumter in South Carolina in April of 1861. Rebel troops attacked, forcing the United States troops to strike the flag and withdraw. The governor of South Carolina said that day that the flag of the United States had been humbled.
And then was fighting words. That really got people's blood up.
Michael Corcoran wrote a biography of the American flag called For Which It Stands.
Within a matter of days, flags are appearing much like you would have seen after 9/11. There are many historical accounts of women walking around with little flags in their hair, dogs decorated with flags. Literally, soldiers lining up to enlist would say, "I'm doing this because of the insult to the flag." And this was really a big change, because up until that time, flags were not ubiquitous at all.
That was the real beginning of the attitude toward the flag we have today. At the start of the Civil War, feeling about the flag was intense. It became the Union. Whitney Smith says no other country had ever felt quite that way about a national flag.
The attack on the flag represented a fundamental attack on the country, and hundreds of thousands of flags were suddenly in demand, were made by individuals or by flag makers, and were flown to show that we were behind the country. That was the beginning of the most important aspect of nationalism, the flag as being the symbol of the whole country.
4 years later, the flag was raised again by victorious Union forces in the ruins of Fort Sumter. And Henry Ward Beecher, one of the most famous orators of his day, spoke. He described the fall of the fort and the battle for the Union's banner.
"You have come back with honor, who departed hence 4 years ago, leaving the air sultry with fanaticism."
He went on,
"Ruin sits in the cradle of treason. Rebellion has perished, but there sits the same flag that was insulted."
Beecher returns again and again to the flag as a symbol of the sovereignty of the nation and the unity of the country, as the glorious gospel banner. In the late 1800s, a time of great westward expansion and floods of new immigrants, the flag was again seen as a way to bind the country together. Scott Ginter, who wrote a cultural history of the flag, says that veterans groups and organizations like the Daughters of the American Revolution became concerned that the American identity would be lost as people crowded into cities, worked at factories instead of on farms. A kind of re-indoctrination around the flag was sponsored by, of all things, children's magazines, led by the most popular, Youth's Companion. Scott Ginter.
They had a movement to get flags in all the public schools, and the young readers of the magazine were encouraged to sell subscription certificates to their communities to raise money, door-to-door, paper certificates that said, "I love and care about the American flag." And when they got enough subscriptions, they would send in the money to the magazine, and the magazine would send them an American flag, which they would then have for their school.
Youth's Companion also invented the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, although like Flag Day and the National Anthem, it did not become official until the middle of the 20th century. President Woodrow Wilson spoke on Flag Day in 1917, just before the U.S. entered the First World War. His speech justifies that decision, but he begins by speaking plainly about the flag and what it symbolizes: unity, power, and, he says, our thought and purpose as a nation. About the flag, "It has no other character than that which we give it from generation to generation. The choices are ours." The flag floats, Wilson says, in majestic silence above all who make those choices. And yet, he goes on, "though silent, it speaks to us of the past, of the men and women who went before us, and of the records they wrote upon it." Linda Wertheimer, NPR News, Washington.